Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Fun. It's fundamental. Who doesn't like having fun? And that's at the heart of one of the world's most successful programs for social and environmental realignment. If it sounds like fun and looks like fun and feels like fun, it must be. And that's the fundamental of change. There's a lot of pride in social awakening. When we return, here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
We've all noticed how very young kids, 8 months, a year, 2 years, give them some music with a strong beat and things start happening. Smiles, the great jerky moves as the toddler gets into it, and we all feel blessed. It's a basic human response. Relying on these and other human responses, rare pride uses a matrix of tactics to manifest success. We continue our journey now to St. Lucia, where Paul Butler joins us. Paul, so tell us, what's your day like looking like in the Caribbean today?
Hey, Sydney, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You?
Good, not too bad. Thanks for letting me join you. We've been working, as you know, for many years on this program. It's now operating, or has operated, in 62 countries around the world. So we're delighted to share our experiences with your listeners.
Well, 62 countries is a lot. You guys are really making a difference. And we just got off the phone with Brett, who gave us a beginning of a concept of how this all goes about. Let's continue talking about actually what's involved. We've talked about the fact that hotspots are defined, that there's a strategy that goes in to sort of begin to look at what's happening, and that you choose a charismatic person who then begins this process, but that's about as far as we got. Can you help us take it from there?
Sure. We believe, as I'm sure Brett's mentioned, that conservation isn't just a biological challenge, it's a social, political, and economic one. And we believe that while people are at the heart of the problem, they're also the key to the solution. We work, as you mentioned, with charismatic, dynamic, and committed individuals at the sites where conservation is needed and where threats are taking place. The secret to our formula is exactly that, having a replicable model that can be easily adapted to sites around the world in different cultures and different geographic areas. We select an individual, bring him to one of our two university courses. We have a course at the University of Kent in England and a course at the University of Guadalajara at Autlan in Mexico, the first in English, obviously, the second in Spanish. Here, the individuals join others who are working to conserve the biodiversity of their sites. They spend 10 weeks learning ecology, learning theory, social marketing, and how to assess the various factors, the various threats that are affecting their site. They then leave the university, return home, and spend the following 12 weeks or 14 weeks designing a project plan, hosting stakeholder meetings to clearly understand what's happening at the site, to draw up concept models, which are then ground truth using questionnaire surveys that are not only provide baseline data, but also help to understand where the various communities are in the sort of continuum of behavior change, whether they understand the threats, whether they understand the impacts that their own behaviors have on those threats, whether they understand the benefits of changing behavior, or whether they see many barriers to making those changes that are necessary. And then there follows a year of active campaigning, which involves a wide range of marketing tools ranging from billboards and posters, sermons and school visits, costumes and puppets, which culminates in a second questionnaire survey to check where we are in effecting changes in knowledge, attitude and practice. These students then return to the University of Kent, make their presentations and design their follow-up strategy, which they will then use as they continue work after the first year of campaigning.
It's an amazing program because you're relying on systems that reach the human spirit in such a way and create community. How did this all come about? You were involved in this process.
Yeah, I started doing this some 25 years ago with my colleagues in St. Lucia. We'd spent several years doing, let's say, traditional outreach, standing in front of people, talking about the silt loads that are affecting the rivers, and we found people were nodding, but they were actually nodding off to sleep. And we saw that despite our good intentions, we weren't really affecting change. What we recognized must happen is that people must become engaged. We looked at the corporate sector and saw numerous corporations selling products that people didn't need, didn't want, but it was done through clever and creative marketing, creating an interest in the product so that people would buy them. And we felt, and subsequently shown, that things that are fun engage people. People want to be involved, and you can get the message across. And as long as you're honest with people in giving them the facts and letting them make their own decisions, we found it a successful approach. The key is having local people run them and trying to hit people across a relatively short span of time with multiple different techniques, as I indicated, ranging from songs to sermons to bumper stickers and posters.
Well, you know, I have a sample sermon here. Mm-hmm. And now, I grew up in a Christian home and actually was exposed to quite a bit of sermonizing. Mm-hmm. And here's the truth. When I heard this one, I got goosebumps because it brought back memories. Quite honestly, this is an extremely effective and wonderful and honest approach. So I'm going to play this little clip. It's short, and you can probably tell us more about this. And then we're going to talk more about some of the unique approaches and then as well some of the great successes. So let's see what happens here with this.
My sermon this morning is captioned God's Love in Nature. And I want you to journey with me this morning back into time. A time called the beginning, an earth with a sound ecological system, well-balanced ecosystem, clean, pure environment. Yes, that was paradise. Oh, my friends, I could imagine all the Amazonas, every species in those days, none were extinct. As they beautified, as they adorned, The foliage or the flora with the lovely plumage. Oh, what a sight! Praise be to God!
You know what? That still works. My whole body is tingling. And you know, that it's very effective. And the thing I'm going to say is I believe that that is absolutely honest. The deliverer of that, who I have to assume is one of your campaign managers, is speaking from his heart.
Yeah, that's Laurent Jean-Pierre. He's from St. Lucia. He's actually a lay preacher with the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and he was preaching a sermon on the environment. He actually wasn't the campaign manager. Mm. The role of our campaign managers is to bring in as many people as they can, whether it's musicians, paint artists, sermons writers and preachers. And that was one of them. And we've had the pleasure to work with all religions, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, each of them giving their own sermons in their own words, and linking the environment to the scriptures, whether it's the Quran or the Bible. And what we try to do is identify people who hold sway over communities, who people look up to and respect. That's why we work with religious leaders, but we also work with musicians. Younger people often look to musicians as their own heroes, and so we've worked with numerous local musicians to produce music, whether it's rap or reggae, country or ballad style, whatever is appropriate to the site. The musicians work with us to write songs that provide the facts that encourage people to take action, learn more about the environment, and hopefully change their behavior.
You know, since you brought it up, I have another clip here that is actually a reggae clip. Let's just let our listeners listen to this, because I think they'll start to understand really the power of your approach. Let's hear this now.
National bird, we all know, pink and pretty flamingo. Bahamians, tell me, have you heard? The sparks of our emerald green bird. Bright and beautiful, watch him fly. Jumping a parade up in the sky. I'm a pirate, I tell you so. Picked up from long, long time ago. Bahamas, help our pirates, please. Don't cut down our pine forest trees. Bahama pirate, help them to survive. We must keep them alive. Columbus 14
1992, so many pirates, now so few. Clients had no emeralds green, but how the pirates were given to the queen. Today our pirates only seen Abacoli, now we're in the trees, they preen. If you were a pirate, how would you feel? Chased from your home by a quicklime deal.
You know, this is just smart stuff. I mean, this is, I can just imagine now all my listeners out there, and their heads are bobbing, and their feet are tapping, and they're feeling good, and that's just people who aren't even personally involved with this particular region or project. Imagine what must happen on the ground as people become part of this process.
Well, that's, of course, exactly what we hope. That track was from the Obia Man in the Bahamas. It was done about 10 years ago, one of our earlier campaigns where we worked with the Bahamas National Trust and an outstanding counterpart, Monique Clark. And she encouraged the Obia Man to produce that track, and it was recorded not just for the radio but also as a music video. And that campaign helped to facilitate the establishment of a reserve for the Bahama parrot on the island of Abaco, thanks to the really dedicated work of the Bahamas National Trust and all Bahamians who rallied to the cause.
Now, of course, in many cases, these songs go on to become fairly popular songs in a nation or in a region.
Yes, they do, exactly. Obviously, not everyone. And what we want is them to be locally popular. So if the song is written for a small community surrounding a protected area, we'd love for it to go nationally popular. What we really want is it to appeal to that exact target segment that we're focusing on, i.e. those people who live around that protected area or the area that we hope will become protected. Exactly.
So let's talk about that year campaign. We've talked about, for example, we've given examples of the music, mm-hmm. bringing in local experts, people involved in education. We haven't really talked about that too much yet. We've talked about bringing in religious leaders. Give us a sense of a really effective approach. That would be terrific.
Well, as I said, it is an integrated approach. So our local counterparts work through a manual of 26 tasks, some of which we've already spoken about. Others involve going into schools, working with teachers to develop curriculum materials, whether it be coloring books or comic books, and also using costumes and puppets so that when they do go into school, they stand out from the crowd. It's not just another teacher standing in front of them talking from a textbook. It's somebody dressed up as the bird or as the turtle, whichever species we're working on, handing out badges and pins and brooches so that kids are rewarded for answering a question. The kid puts on the pin, which carries the message of the campaign, runs home all excited because a very large bird or target species has come to the school. It's the first time they've ever seen such a thing. Imagine, you know, a Disney character in a site where people don't see these kind of things. This is really new to them in a rural area in Indonesia, for example. They run home super excited. The parents ask where they stole the pin from, the brooch. They said, "I didn't steal it. A huge bird came to my school today and gave it to me because I answered a question right." You know, as any parent would know, if your child is excited and you've just accused them of ripping off a brooch, you're now all ears listening to why a big bird came to your school, and the child is super excited. They write love letters to these animals. They become passionate about them and about their conservation. So the idea is to create an upswelling of interest in the environment. It takes time. It takes commitment. It's not easy. It's obviously easy to talk about, but it really is down to the dedication of the local people we have who are working with us as they work through the manual, as they do the various tasks, starting with, you know, schools and then working with religious leaders and with musicians, so that it's rather like an orchestra. You start with one instrument, and then another instrument comes in, makes a little more noise, and then another one comes in, and if they're working in harmony, you've got a nice song that people want to listen to, in this case a nice message that we hope people will not only listen to but take to heart and change both knowledge, attitudes, and ideally, of course, behavior.
Now, of course, an important aspect of this, too many of these cultures and people and communities have really utilized and relied on these natural environments and in the process helped to destroy them. And what you're helping them as well to do is to establish economic stability in harmony with their environment. Let's talk about how you go about that.
Yeah, very often we try to partner with other conservation organizations so that we're bringing a piece of the picture, a piece of the solution to the table. If you only teach people through the methodology that we use that conservation is important but don't remove some of the barriers, then you're simply going to have people feeling guilty about clearing the forest. Rare has its own enterprise program where we strive to help develop ecotourism, whether it's training nature guides, creating trails, in the hope of creating some economic incentives as well as sort of the environmental education incentives to protect the environment. In other areas, we work in collaboration with other groups, like the Nature Conservancy in Komodo, for example, where we're doing an education campaign on talking about destructive fishing techniques. While we're doing the education, the Nature Conservancy is implementing various alternative fishing techniques, such as talking about fish aggregation techniques. So the idea is this is one part of a solution, and we try to bring other parts, either ourselves or working in partnership with others, recognizing that we need to create jobs at the same time as creating awareness, and that the two things together can help conservation.
We're talking with Paul Butler, who is the Vice President of RARE. You've had some extraordinary successes around the world. Talk about there's some very serious outcomes that ultimately, although these sound like sort of fun and things, lead to very serious outcomes to the establishment of nature centers and parks. We've got about 30 seconds left. Help us understand that.
Yeah, we've helped to facilitate the establishment of reserves in partnership with the local lead agencies. They're the real heroes in a number of sites, including Grenada, Mount Hartmann, including St. Lucia, including the Bahamas, including several community reserves in Fiji. Our campaigns have helped to facilitate those. Equally, they've helped to facilitate the passage of legislation, the reduction of fires in Mexico, the collection of solid waste in the form of over 1 million plastic bottles in a small rural community in Mexico, in the Yucatan. Real tangible benefits and tangible changes in knowledge, attitudes, and behavior.
Paul Butler, Vice President of RARE, thanks for sharing your spirit and passion.
Thank you.
We next meet a Pride campaign leader when we come back on the Wild Side News. Ideas, they're everywhere. Good ones, bad ones, mostly just fleeting and gone. We've been talking about a good idea that is changing the world. In a moment, we meet one of the very special people who are leading a RARE Pride campaign, and the woman who keeps the show on the road. When we return here on the Wild Side News, your Voice of the Earth radio network.